Stand by, Terry Saul Show. 5, roll tape. 4, cue Jerry. 3, bring audio up. 2, stand by. 1, play intro.
Stay tuned for the Terry Saul Show, Saltissimo, on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 and 1220 AM, KSLM.
I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge, dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity, allegiance, my love and my devotion to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom, wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United. That means that we have all come together. States. Individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose. All divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose, and that's love for country. And to the Republic, Republic, a state in which sovereign power is invested in representative chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people, and it's from the people to the leaders, not from the leaders to the people. For which it stands. One nation, meaning so blessed by God, indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation, and justice. The principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others. For all. For all. Which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance, under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer? And that be eliminated from schools, too.
Good morning, and welcome to the Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, KSLM AM and FM. I am your host, and I'm so glad you joined us this morning as we broadcast from the Denny's in South Salem. Today's special guest is Captain Richard Chesbrough, who joined us last week. And when you were with us last week, we were talking about the 102-foot Lady Free and how you traveled all over the Pacific in that. You did some boat racing to Hawaii and to British Columbia, as well as in the Bay Area there. We were also talking about the fact that you were even burying people at sea somewhat. A little bit of a trouble there with the ashes when the wind came up there. And then all of that excitement led to the end of your run in the Bay Area there. You took the boat up to Sacramento. From Sacramento, you decided to head to the Panama Canal Zone, right?
Well, we were on our way to the Caribbean. To get there, you have to go through the Panama Canal.
Now, do you have to have special permits or anything when you do that?
No, not a special permit. I mean, obviously, there's lots of paperwork to fill out.
Do they charge you to go through the Panama Canal?
There is a small charge. The big ships pay most of the fees to keep the canal running, because they have what they call a measurement system.
Okay.
And they measure these boats in terms of how much cargo they're carrying. And the interesting thing is, the reason why you see a lot of container ships with the big containers up on the deck is because those don't count. It's only what's under the deck, what's actually enclosed within the ship,
really,
that they pay the fees on. At least it was that way when I was going through the canal.
Maybe when, it's when was nowadays. That? When did you go through there?
Oh, must have been 80, 81, somewhere in the early 80s.
Yep. Do you remember what they charged you to get through there?
Just a couple hundred bucks. I mean, we were just like a private boat. I mean, anybody can go through the canal, but there'll be some small charge.
How long did it take you to go through the canal? Is it done in a day?
It was a full day. Yep.
Really?
One day we went through. We went through actually with other ships, and they would just tuck us in behind a big freighter or something.
So how does it work? You go for a little bit, and then you stop, and they raise the water or something? How's it work?
Correct. Well, we went in from the Pacific side. You got to understand the way the locks work is the land is highest in the middle, which is where Gatun Lake is. There's a series of locks on both sides going down into the Caribbean and also into the Pacific. When you're coming from the Pacific, we were being raised up. And then after we went through the lake, then we were going down on the other side, going into the Caribbean.
But, now, what's on the sides? Can you get off your boat and kind of walk it if you wanted to?
No.
You stay on the boat?
Once you're on the boat, you stay on the boat. Nobody gets off.
So there's no vendors along the sides trying to sell everything?
No. You're in the canal zone then. For the big ships, they have what they call mules, which is like a small locomotive, and they hook the dock lines to that mule. And the mule, of course, is extremely strong, and there's like, I don't know, four, sometimes six of them, depending upon the size of the boat. And they just pull the boat right on through the locks. But for a small boat like us, you're on your own. You know, you throw your line. Actually, they threw lines down to us from the top of the canal, and they would just lash us in place. But then when it was time to leave the lock, when the gates opened up and it was time to get out, they just throw the lines down to you, and you just motor on through on your own.
So how many different vessels can go through the locks at one time?
You know, I don't know the answer to that specifically. I'm sure Google would have an answer for that.
Well, is there a line waiting to go through the locks?
Oh, a huge line. I mean, the ships are stacked up on both ends waiting their turns to get through. Keep in mind, each time you go through a lock, millions of gallons of water are just wasted because it comes from the high part in the middle. It's used in the lock system, and then it's out to the oceans on both sides. So they want to maximize. You know, if they can get two small freighters into a lock at a chamber at a time, that's what they do. So it's all well orchestrated.
Do they go in both directions then?
Going in both directions.
At the same time then?
Yep. There's two locks on either side. One going one direction, one going the other.
Incredible.
When we were going through, Noriega was still in power. And I made the mistake of when they came aboard doing all the customs paperwork and everything, they asked us if we had any weapons on board. And I told them, I said, yes, I always, carry weapons just in case, you need them for any reason, pirates or whatever. And I had beautiful stainless steel weapons. I had a shotgun, a rifle, and a 44 Magnum pistol, all stainless steel. You know, what they're supposed to do is they're supposed to tell you to put them under lock and key and make sure they stay there for the course while going through the canal. In our case, they said, no, we will hold them for you. And, of course,
sure
without telling me, I would never see them again, but that's indeed what happened.
Yeah.
And, of course, you could pick them up at the other end, I'd be willing to bet Noriega had those weapons right close to him,
So do they go through, do they search your boat just to see what all you're taking? I mean, how do they know you're not smuggling drugs?
They didn't search us for that at all. I mean, we were coming from, the north. I mean, if we had been probably coming up from South America, maybe that, I don't know. We were never searched at all.
Okay.
They just come aboard, and most of the time they're looking for a little propina, they call it, which is a tip, a little money tip.
Why would you want to give them a tip?
Well,
to leave you alone?
Just to make it faster and to make sure you get
and not take your guns, your stainless steel guns.
Yeah, well, that one didn't work, I didn't even have any choice there. They just wanted those guns.
Do they come right out and ask you for a tip?
They have subtle little ways of, we might be able to make this faster if that's what you really want. That's sort of a conversation. And you know darn well what they're getting at. In South America, everything happens that way.
Really?
I had to once get an IBMer who had died down there, and he was working for me up in San Jose, California. He passed away by an accident on his honeymoon, actually. And IBM sent me down there to bring his body back across the border to the United States. I don't know how many of those little propinas I had to pass around to make it happen quickly, because he was sitting in a box and he was getting ripe. This paperwork's going to take 4 or 5 days. However, we do have an expedited way, you know, if you really want to go that way.
It'll cost you a little bit, but that's...
Yeah, they never would come right out and say that, but you flash a $100 bill at them or whatever, and all of a sudden you'll lose a couple, 3 days of paperwork time, you know.
Okay, so you got yourself through the Panama Canal, and so now you're on the other side.
Right.
Where are you heading in your...
Well, we were heading to Miami, to Florida.
Okay.
And we headed on out, and all of a sudden we got notice on our radio that Hurricane David was sweeping further south than anticipated. And obviously we didn't want to engage Hurricane David, so we turned around and headed back.
Now, I was teasing you on our last show last week that you went right through the hurricane, but you, how did you get notice that it was coming?
Through our single sideband radio.
Okay, you know, and who are you talking to on that?
Just the weather service.
Okay.
And you don't really talk to them. You just listen. It's like listening to the weather on
and
ABC.
And they said
News.
All ships heading in this particular area or something
they
to get out?
They told us what latitude and longitude it was coming in, and we looked at our charts and realized we were going to get right in the way. So you turned.
How much notice did you have?
Not quite enough, because we did get hit by the tail end of it.
I knew you would.
And and it ended up snapping our square sails. You know, the yards that go across. Remember I was telling you about that last week?
Right.
Snapped them right in half. We headed back towards the coast, and we ended up in the San Blas Islands, which is a group of little islands just off the coast of Panama. And the Kuna Indians are the ones that live on those little islands. And by the way, the islands are only a foot above the ocean. I mean, that's how low they are out of the water. But what a fantastic people they were.
Right. So get back to the Hurricane David there. How long were you feeling the effect of that?
Oh, maybe a half a day. Not too long, but it was enough to do the damage.
Right.
And because we were right on the outskirts of it. We just, you know, we have an engine on board, but it just wasn't fast enough to... move our
but
butts
you,
out of the way.
You had plenty of wind, though, with that hurricane coming.
Had
up.
Plenty of wind. Oh,
you were trying to outrun it?
We were trying to outrun it. And so we had a few of our sails up, but none of our big sails. And so we got out of the way, and like I said, we ended up in the islands. But they
anybody
couldn't repair
anything. Anybody get seasick
anything.
On that? I mean, I'm sure the waters weren't real calm.
I think our adrenaline was running too high for that, you know.
Right.
It wasn't like the Harvey Milk situation, you know.
Did you ever get seasick in any of your boating over? I mean, you must have hit some really rough waters at some point.
Well, I'm not really prone to seasickness. The only time I've ever gotten seasick is when I was down around the engine and there's a strong smell of diesel in the air, plus the motion, and that'll get to me if I'm in that too long. I just like to stay up on deck and breathe the fresh air. And
okay, so you get into the San Blas Islands with, we got about a minute and a half left to go here. Where exactly are the San Blas Islands?
Well, they're on the Caribbean side of Panama, and not too many people know about them, but they absolutely love Americans. Most people, if you've ever vacationed or traveled to Panama, you see what they call molas for sale in the stores. They're very colorful pieces of material. They do pictures and designs on it in thread. And they just sew pieces of material all together, one on top of another. And they make absolutely gorgeous design work on these molas.
All right, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, more with today's special guest, Captain Richard Chesbrough, as we continue to chat with him as he travels around the world. We are broadcasting today from Denny's in South Salem. You are listening to the Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Back in just a moment. Don't go away. We're just heading through the Panama.
You're listening to the Terry Saul Show, Saltissimo, on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 and 1220 AM KSLM.
Hey, this is Terry Saul inviting you to join me each and every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for the Terry Saul Show. In the weeks coming up, we'll be joined by Kent McCord, who played Officer Jim Reed in the Adam 12 television show. We'll be talking with comedian Louis Anderson, as well as recording artist Patrick Lamb and local recording artist Brady Goss. We'll also be joined by Dr. Melinda Massart, who is an assistant professor of family medicine at the University of Pittsburgh. We'll be talking about precision medicine, all of them and more. So join us on the Terry Saul Show, Saturdays at 10 a.m. on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 FM at 1220 AM, KSLM.
back in 5, 4, Q-Terry, 2, 1, you're on.
Hi, this is Marianne. I mean Dawn Wells. You know, if I had a radio on that island, you know who I'd be tuned into? Terry Saul.
Welcome back to the Saturday morning Terry Saul Show. Today's guest, we held over from last week because he had so much to talk about, is Captain Richard Chesbrough. And we just got through the Panama Canal. We were in the San Blas Islands talking about the Indians there in the San Blas Islands. And you were rather impressed with them.
I was very impressed with them. They're not impressive to look at because they're very short. I mean, I don't think there's
so
a single...
So am I, but that's never stopped you before.
Yeah, but you're not 4 feet tall. You know, you're...
On a good day.
They're the size of the Aborigines in Australia.
Okay.
But I'll tell you, one thing we learned, they challenged us, and I had a crew of kids that were good-sized people, and there were 16 of us on board, and they challenged us to a basketball game while we were there in the islands. And
okay.
We thought, oh, no sweat. I mean, all we got to do is shoot the ball over their heads, you know, and dunk it in, no problem at all. They had one caveat. They said, well, we don't have any shoes, so you have to take your shoes off, too. We all play barefooted here in the islands, and it's all sand, you know, no problem. Well, it was a big problem for us because we got blisters real quick. They were amazing. They didn't shoot over our heads. They went through our legs around us and
really?
Made us look like fools. They whipped us every single game incredibly. I mean, it was embarrassing.
How do you play basketball on sand?
They don't have any courts, the basketball courts.
How do you
courts,
bounce the ball in sand? Throw the ball
well,
down and stop.
It's really, well, no, it's not soft sand. This is real hard sand.
Okay.
It's hard pack. And, yeah, you bounce the ball, and it bounces real nice, you know, no
all
problem.
Right. Now, while you were down there, you made a commercial. Is that correct?
No, different country. That's much further on.
Which country are we in right now?
I'm still in the islands.
All right, I'll hang on the islands with you for a while.
I mentioned it was a matriarchal society. I think I said that before. The women run everything.
Well, isn't that the same here?
Well, pretty much. But down there, they hold all the offices. They make all the important decisions. They're the ones that make the money because
it's called
they
marriage. That's what it's called.
It's called marriage.
That's what it's called.
And they do have marriage for sure. They sell these molas in Panama. And,
a molar?
A mola.
Mola. What is that?
Remember, I was describing it last time. It's a piece of fabric. They start off with a fabric, a large fabric, and then they sew other pieces of material in different colors on it, and create pictures.
Really?
Barbara's got, we have a number of them at our home.
Yeah.
I'll have to show them to you. They're absolutely gorgeous.
Mola.
And it's very unique, and they sell a lot of them. And that's how they pay for their canned goods and, you know, their thread and needles and all the things they use.
How much does the standard mola cost?
Well, at the time we were there, probably $4 or $5 was a typical price.
And how big are they?
Well, they come in all different sizes. I mean, they have handbags, they do make entire dresses out of them.
Really?
The interesting thing about the women of the Kuna Indian women is not only are they dressed beautifully all the time, but they also have lots of gold on them. The necklaces are pure gold. Earrings, nose rings. They have great big nose rings that they wear. Solid gold. And this was driving the Panamanians nuts. Where do they get all this gold from?
Because they make all the decisions. You just said that. It's a no-brainer.
Well, the men do have a responsibility. They're supposed to protect the women, but primarily they collect the water, and they have to get their water on the mainland. So they have to row their boats out every morning, and go all the way up a river on the mainland to where the water is really fresh and clean, and then bring it back out to the islands. They also fish and provide food that way, but the women do everything else. You know?
Are they friendly to,
oh,
to foreigners?
Wonderful.
To you?
And they love Americans.
Really?
The reason they love Americans so much, I found out, is that one time Noriega decided he was going to find out where all this gold is coming from. He sent a whole company of troops into that area to sneak up on them and follow them when they go upriver. Because he said they've got to have a gold mine up in the jungle there somewhere. So the Kuna Indians got word to the United States, you know, what was going on. So we sent troops down there. But you know what? Our troops didn't have to do anything because not a single one of those soldiers came out of the jungle.
Really?
Yeah. The Indians took care of them themselves.
Wow.
But because we responded and we had troops there to if necessary, they have a soft spot for Americans.
All right, so now are we in Florida yet? Did we get to Florida?
Nope. Oh, another quick story.
All right, didn't want to go to Florida.
As we were finally leaving the San Blas Islands, the king of the island, or the head honcho, whatever his title was, presents us with a baby tiger.
A real one?
A real, living, honest-to-God tiger.
Why?
And it was gorgeous. But it was a young one. It was too early for it to be separated from its mother. They said they found it in the jungle, and it was abandoned by the mother. I said, well, what am I supposed to do with it? I'm on a boat. And they said, well, this is our gift to you. It's yours. Take it. And you can't say no to these people. So we sail off, and we're scratching our heads trying to figure out how to feed this tiger and keep it alive. Well, the long and the short was it didn't become a problem because it did pass away. And we had a burial at sea, wrapped up in a mola, and we buried this little baby tiger
at sea. How did it die?
Malnutrition, probably, because we couldn't get it to eat anything.
Really?
You know, it needed mama's milk, you know, and like most cats do. We tried fabricating. We took plastic gloves and tried to make a nipple out of it and put canned milk in it. We tried everything. It just wouldn't respond.
Final minute and a half. When you go out on an adventure like this, how much food and what do you take with you? Medical supplies?
Well, we always were well supplied, especially with medical supplies, because you can get staph infections in the islands real easy, just from a rope burn, and that can be deadly. We actually ran across a boat that the captain had passed away, and they had him all wrapped up in plastic in the forepeak, because you don't want to come into port with a report saying, oh, by the way, we lost the captain out at sea, because then you're in big trouble. You bring the body back, and you're safe, you know, because...
Really?
Yeah, because it's obvious what he died of. No, we had plenty of provisions. We ate a lot of the local foods wherever we were. Never got sick. And we fished all the time, too, as well.
All right, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, more with today's guest, Captain Richard Chesbrough, as we continue to broadcast from the Denny's in South Salem. You're listening to Salem's original radio station, KSLM AM and FM. Back in just a minute.
You're listening to The Terry Soul Show, Saltissimo, on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 and 1220 AM, KSLM.
Hey, this is Donnie Osmond. Join my buddy Terry Soul. The guy is totally not normal, but hey, you gotta love him.
We're back in 5, 4, Q-Terry, 2, 1, you're on.
Hey, this is Donnie Osmond. I just want to say congratulations to my buddy Terry Saul. Terry is going to be opening up for BJ Thomas for a few shows. Good job, Terry. Way to go, dude.
Hi, this is BJ Thomas, and you're listening to my buddy Terry Saul.
We are back. This is Terry Saul's Saturday morning radio show on Salem's original radio station, KSLM AM and FM. I am your host. We're so glad that you joined us this morning. Our special guest is Captain Richard Chesbrough, and he's been traveling around the world on his 102-foot Lady Free. Are we in Florida yet?
We are not in Florida yet.
Okay, where are we at now?
Well, at the last segment, we were in the San Blas Islands, and we had just left with a live tiger
that cub, didn't make it though, tiger. Doggone it.
Unfortunately didn't make it.
Okay.
Much to the regret of our entire crew.
I bet.
And we still didn't have our sails and our masts fixed yet. So we headed down the coast, and I contacted the authorities in Cartagena and asked them if I could put in for repairs. And I didn't have a visa, didn't have any permission to land, especially in Colombia. That's always a concern. But Cartagena is kind of a tourist destination. It's a very safe area.
So do you have to get permission to go into a port?
Oh, yeah. We always called ahead and got permission. Well, they had to have a place to put us, first of all. And they just ask you a few questions. How many do you have on board? Everybody got passports. And then they'll give you up to a three-month visa.
Wow.
And you can stay 1 week or all 3 months or whatever you want to do. When I told them it was for the repairs of the boat and we got hit by the tail end of Hurricane David and whatever, it was no problem. And what a gorgeous harbor that was. I mean, when you go into the bay, there's a fortress on both sides of the entrance. One of them is high, one of them is low. And they have cannons sticking out of these big Spanish fortresses.
Well, that's not a good sign to see.
Well, no, and the reason they do that is because in the old days, when the bad guys were coming in their ships, they would open up and one of the cannons would take out the sails because it would take all the high stuff, keep them from being able to progress. They didn't have motors in those days. And then the other one would hammer the hull and hopefully put a hole in it and sink it, you know. So it was a very effective means of keeping people out of the harbor.
So how long were you there?
Fascinating history here. We ended up being there for, I don't know, 2 or 3 months, I guess.
It took that long to get your boat repaired?
Oh, yeah. Well, we had to fabricate. Each spa had to be kind of made by hand. And keep in mind, these things are the size of telephone poles. In fact, even a little fatter in the middle. And then they taper out towards the ends. And,
now, how are you paying for this?
Well, we did most of the work ourselves, my own crew. Keep in mind, I had about 16 people on board at the time from all these different countries. But
if you're still sitting there for a couple of months or so, you've got to feed the crew. And I mean, do you have that much food and stuff on board?
Yeah, we were pretty well staffed for supplies because remember we stocked up to be able to make it all the way to Florida, and we figured that was that was going to take a few weeks of getting across, and so we had enough supplies.
But the few weeks turned into a couple of months, though.
And a lot of these guys had some spending money. Things weren't that expensive, you know. If you eat the local foods, we weren't eating hotels and stuff, you know.
Yeah,
we would.
And everybody would stay on the boat.
And everybody helped out. We all stayed on the boat at night.
Now, what about you? Were your kids with you on this one?
My daughter was with me. Lori was with me.
How old was she?
She was probably 13. I'm saying.
Okay. So was she? This the summertime, or was she in school? Or
it must have been summertime because she did not go to school at all.
Okay.
While we were there.
So she stayed. She stayed with you and a crew of about 15 or so people.
Right. Right.
And you're doing all the work and stuff.
And they could speak any language, and it was amazing, you know.
Your crew could speak any language?
Yeah, because they were from different countries.
Okay.
And we had two or three of them that spoke Spanish fluently. And we learned to always go in pairs, at least, just from a self-protection standpoint. Cartagena may be a tourist town, but it was still a lot like the Wild West. And I remember one experience I had was I was walking across a big central park in the downtown area. All of a sudden, I heard gunshots. And I'm looking around trying to figure out what's going on. And here's a guy running for his life with the police behind him. And they're firing on the run, you know, trying to hit him. And finally, he just dropped down and put his hands up, you know, like, don't shoot me, you know. But boy, they are serious. And they don't care if the public is around. It's just Wild West time.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was incredible. And
now, you did a commercial while you were there, right?
Yeah, we did a Coca-Cola
commercial. Okay, we're finally getting to the commercial now.
Not the commercial.
All right. What is it?
Funny
for Coca-Cola?
Story. It was Coca-Cola. And actually, I was walking on the beach with my daughter, and I had my pet macaw parrot on my shoulders. His name was Panacho.
What, do you think you're a pirate or something?
We had two parrots on board, a blue and gold, and then a military
and
macaw.
And you keep it on your shoulder?
Yeah, he would sit right there on my shoulder.
For how long?
Long as he wanted to. I mean, I never chased him off, and he'd just stay right there.
You ever poop on your shoulder?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I used to wear a cloth over it so it wouldn't get on my shirt or anything.
I do that when I hold my granddaughter, you know?
But he was great. People would try to pet him, and he'd usually bite him. But I would always warn him ahead of time, you know, if he doesn't like you, he'll bite you. If he likes you, you can pet him all day long. He won't care.
And he would never take off and fly around or anything?
Well, yeah, except I had his wings clipped, so he couldn't fly very far.
Okay, so he couldn't fly.
Yeah. Oh, he could fly, but usually it was on a constant downhill slide.
All right, so how did this commercial come about?
So anyways, we're on the beach walking, and this guy approaches us, gives me his card, and it says Coca-Cola on his card. And he says, this Saturday, he says, we're going to be shooting a commercial in downtown Cartagena. And he says, we think you and your daughter would make would be a perfect fit for the commercial. So we didn't really know too much about it. So he said, there's $300 in it for each of you. Well, $300 for people that are on the verge of starvation, you know, that's a lot of money. So we said, okay, cool. So we showed up on Saturday. It was in a square that has a roundabout in the middle with a big statue of some guy on a horse, one of the military guys, I guess. And there's roads that come into it. My wife Barbara and I have visited this spot, since then, and I've shown her exactly where it all occurred. And they said, here's the plan. He said, as you can see, we've got cameras set up. Some of them were on big scaffoldings, and others were at ground level. And, oh, there must have been half a dozen cameras crews around. And they rented the whole square for the day, so nobody was allowed in it except crew. Lori, my daughter, was to be selling flowers on the street to passerbys, and they had a little cart set up with all the flowers in it. And then they had another little girl, no part of us at all, and she was selling Coca-Cola and to people as they walked by. So they said, okay, here's what your job is. You're going to be a bus driver. And I said, a bus driver? They said, yeah. I said, I'm a captain of a ship, and now I'm driving a bus? Well, you know, that's the way it is. They liked the beard, I guess. So they said, okay, here's the deal. You're going to get in the bus, and you're going to go up to the top of that little street there, which is sloping upwards, and you're going to bring the bus down. By the way, we're going to have a brass band in the bus playing loud music, salsa music, and it was. And on the roof of the bus is all kinds of fruits and vegetables. When you get to the statue down at the bottom, you're going to see a horse and buggy coming up alongside of you with two tourists in the back and the driver, you know, up in the front. We want it to look like a collision happens, and so you got to slam the brakes on and make all the fruit fall off so you got to really hit the brakes hard, you know, to make that happen. The driver of the horse and buggy is going to jump down off his buggy, and he's going to come over and he's going to start yelling at you in Spanish, and he's going to pull you out of the bus, and you're going to be in this heated argument, and then along comes the little girl with two Coca-Colas, and she just, you know, tugs on your coat and hand you a Coca-Cola, a nice cold one, and one also to the buggy driver. And then the whole argument goes away. Everybody starts smiling, and you break into the song, the Coca-Cola jingle, you know, una sonrisa con Coca-Cola, you know, all in Spanish. And everybody lives happily ever after. That was the deal. So he says, first, we're going to do a dress rehearsal, you know, like a dress rehearsal. Right. I backed the truck up this little grade. Not too far up, you know, but it was definitely on a downward slope. They give me the signal to go. So here I come down the slope, and this brass band is right in my ears. You know, the trombones and the clarinets and bugles and everything. And I'm keeping an eye on the statue, but I can't see the horse and buggy because he's coming in from the other direction. All of a sudden, there he is, you know, like right in front of me. So I panic. I slam the brakes on, and guess what? No brakes.
Oh, no.
Those son of a gun set me up. And now here I am with a bus full of musicians aiming for this horse and buggy. Couldn't do anything except hit the buggy, which I did. And all the fruit came crashing down. The guy now jumps off the buggy. His front wheel is all crushed. Didn't hit the horse, didn't hurt the people in the back, but I really did a number on his buggy. And he jerks me out of the bus. And now he's screaming at me. I mean, he was hot. And the two little girls are coming out, and we're both saying, get away, get away. I thought the guy was going to kill me. And that was what they had planned all along. I was set up.
Wow.
And you know what? That commercial played for over a year in South America. It was one of the most popular Coca-Cola commercials ever filmed.
Have you seen the commercial? I've never seen it.
Nope.
No.
I've tried to get a copy of it. And we now have a contact in Bogota, the family of a foreign student that's lived with us. And we're going to ask her mother if she might track it down for us.
I wonder if you could find it on YouTube or something.
I'll show it to you. I don't know. That goes all the way back to the early 80s. You know,
yeah.
That's a ways back.
So did the guy in the buggy, did he know that you were going to really slam into him?
No, neither one of us. We thought it was a dress rehearsal. Now, of course,
so
they tried telling them right away, we're going to reimburse you. We are going to fix up your buggy like new. And they did. You know, they made it all right. But they knew they were only going to get one shot at this.
Wow. When we come back, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about swimming with the sharks. Apparently, you must like doing that or something, right?
I didn't have much choice, but...
All right. We'll also talk about pirates.
All right.
All of that and more as we take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 KSLM AM and FM. Back in a moment.
Check it out, Terry Saul and the Macho Man Randy Savage, tag team partners for life. Nobody can beat us.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show, Saltissimo, on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 and 1220 AM KSLM.
1, you're on.
Welcome back to our final few minutes with Captain Richard Chesbrough. He's been our guest last week as well as this week. He's just so full of stories. I said stories, so be nice. Okay. I wanted to talk to you about one of the things that you told me a long time ago is that in all of your adventures around the world several times, I should say, you also went swimming with the sharks. Why would you do that?
Well, it wasn't done on purpose.
You think?
Yeah. Our first encounter with sharks was actually in the San Bla- No, oh, cripe, I just went blank on the island group just south of Tahiti. Anyways, it's a group of atolls, and the waters are full of sharks. My son Mark, at the ripe old age of 9, decided he was going to try to catch one. By God, he did. He got about a 6-footer on the line.
Why would he want one?
Well, he just thought it'd be fun to catch it. Didn't realize what to do with it after he caught it, but he brought it up on deck, and of course, he let it lay there for long enough that he thought it would die. Well, sharks don't die that. I mean, they're like prehistoric animals. You know, they don't care if they're out of the water. They'll still live for quite a while.
They'll still eat you.
So he's showing it off to everybody, and he's holding it up in the air and drops it back down the deck, and the thing is really looking like it's dead. So he decides he's going to go after his hook, which was still in the shark's mouth.
Oh, boy.
Bad decision. As soon as he reached his hand in the shark's mouth, the shark's eyes pop open and clamps down on my son's
just like that.
Hand. Just like that. So now all hell breaks loose, and we're all trying to figure out how to get this thing. Well, fortunately, the shark wasn't in great condition, but it still had a grip on his hand. I went to work cutting the head off of the shark. I figured I'm going to get him from behind. I wasn't going to reach in his mouth and have two hands in his mouth. And
so Mark must be in pain at this point, too.
Oh, yeah. He was in pain, and he was scared and all of the above, as a 9-year-old would be. But finally, when I finally severed the right artery or nerve or whatever in the shark's neck, pressure released, and we were able to open up the jar and get his hand and his hook back, you know.
Wow.
And we bandaged him all up and everything. And so that was our first adventure with sharks. The second
Did
one
you
was,
have a little chat with him about that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't really have to. He learned a lesson real quick. You know, you treat that mouth with a lot of respect.
Sure.
Then he wanted us to try to carve the jar out of the shark. I said, no, Mark, not going to happen. You know, we're going to give it to the islanders, and they can do with it as they wish, you know. And I don't know what they do with shark meat, but they did something with it. And then our second adventure was I was scuba diving, just snorkeling with my daughter, and we were just picking up seashells in shallow water. All of a sudden, my daughter feels this something brush against her side, and she turns around and looks, and it was a doggone shark, a pretty good size one, that just came by and just brushed her. So she taps me on the shoulder. I'm swimming just a little bit up ahead of her. She catches up to me and points, you know, to it, and here it is circling around again, you know, like it was coming back for a second shot. And that's the way they do it. They first want to feel you to see what you are and whether you might be something of interest to them to have lunch.
Yeah.
And then we realize the real problem is that she was carrying a little bag on her waistband that had the shells that she had collected in it. And I think the smell of all those shells and the little creatures that live in it is what was attracting him. So we didn't hang around to wait for that second pass. We immediately went to the surface and got back into the little rubber dinghy that we had. We had a little Zodiac up there. And so that was the end of that time. So we have a deep respect for sharks.
No.
And then the third time, my remembrance for all these little islands is lacking. But we were at anchor in about 30 feet of water, probably 100 yards from shore. We normally would take our dinghy back and forth to shore. But this time the weather was so beautiful, the water was nice and warm, we decided to just swim to shore. So again, we put on our face mask and our snorkels, and the three kids and I were swimming to shore. And about halfway there, you know, with still 50 yards left to go, we happen to look down, and there's a whole school of sharks swimming beneath us, probably about 8 of them in this school. And again, they're 6- and 8-footers, you know, good-sized creatures. And, of course, the kids are all looking at me with their great big eyes wide open.
Dad, do something.
Like, what do we do, Dad? You know, and so I, you know, motioned to them, you know, just stay calm. Don't wiggle your fins. Just play dead, you know. And we did. We just kind of laid on the surface there and just hovered in place. And they swam underneath us, probably about 20 feet down. evidently never noticed us or didn't pay any attention to us and just swam right by and kept on going. And so,
wow.
And then we had a fourth experience. This one was a fun one. My wife and I decided to do a little skinny dipping one night, just the two of us.
Uh-huh.
And it was a gorgeous night. We're on this in this little bay with the, you know, the moon. And it was just one of those romantic, you know, things. So here we are out in probably waist-deep water, you know, skinny dipping. And all of a sudden, we see the shark fin coming towards us, you know, just coming right towards us. Unfortunately, we were too far out, and he got between us and the shore. And he's, you know, kind of swimming around on the inside of us. So we couldn't do anything except just stand there and wait and see what was going to happen. As soon as he went around behind us, boy, we were just boogieing for the shore.
Wow.
Sharks, generally, they're not going to mess with you unless you're messing with them. And we met some people that were doing research on sharks. And we learned a lot about shark behavior. And that's what they were doing. They were studying shark behavior. You know, the way the fins are up or down, you know, depends on whether they're going to be aggressive or non-aggressive and what to do if one is coming at you. You know, if you've got something to protect yourself, do it. Don't wear anything shiny that will attract them. Just like barracuda, you know, you never want to wear rings or watches or anything if there's barracuda in the area, because they'll go right after it. And I don't know why, it's just attracted to the
shiny part.
To the shiny things, yeah.
Couple of minutes left here real quick. Any experiences with pirates in any of your travels?
Well, most of the pirates that we ran into were kids or teenagers trying to steal stuff from the boat. And they used to like to come out after dark, thinking that we were all asleep. We would generally dry our clothing on the ratlins going around the rails, you know, the handrails. The next morning we'd wake up and all the clothes would be gone. Next day we're in town and you could see people wearing our shorts and T-shirts, you know, around on the island.
You wore a shirt the other day. I could have sworn I had one like that one time, but it's a whole other story.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah. When you're not cruising around the world on your 102-foot Lady Free, obviously you and your lovely wife Barbara are running the Willamette Queen, you've been doing that for about 20 years now?
20 years last January.
Yeah.
Yep.
And during the different holidays, you have different brunches, and you've got a big brunch coming up here in a couple of weeks. What do you got going on?
Well, the same as what we did on Mother's Day, we're going to do for the fathers. And we've got just a tremendous brunch laid out, more food than anybody can possibly eat, lots of choices. The Salem Senators are going to be performing.
Oh, they're great.
They've got a whole a group of songs picked out to entertain the guys. And we're going to honor Dad.
Nice.
Just like we honored Mom.
Are there still seats available?
There are still seats available, absolutely.
Okay. And it's by reservation only. They need to give you a holler. And what's the number there?
503-371-1103.
503-371-1103. As they say, operators are standing by. Captain Richard, it's always a pleasure having you on. You have so many stories, and they're always so much fun to listen to. And I want to thank you, and we'll chat again.
Absolutely. In fact, just real quickly, when people come aboard the boat, all they have to do is come up in the pilot house and ask me to see my scrapbooks. I have a copy of them on board. And they can actually see the pictures of what we just
Yeah, they're fascinating.
About.
I've been looking through this during this interview, and they're just amazing, some of these photographs that you have on here.
Yeah, it's fun. I wrote a book.
Did you really?
Absolutely.
We'll talk
it's
about that next time.
It's called The Corporate Alternative.
The Corporate Alternative.
Yep.
All right. Captain, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
If you would like us to come to your business for a broadcast, drop us a line at terry@1220.am or catch me on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Terry Saul. A big thank you to our special guest, and we will be back next week and do this all over again at 10 a.m. on Salem's original radio station, KSLM AM and FM. Have a great and safe week. Today's show was produced by Leon J. Tacky, and it goes without saying this has been a Tacky production.
That's a wrap. Good job, folks. And we're off. Thanks, everybody.